brother. What's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, Earl?
I'm doing fine, man. I'm doing fine. It's always good to come in on Monday morning, you know. By the time Friday rolls around, you're glad to say, well, I can, it's good to have a couple of days away from the studio and radio. But then when Monday rolls around, you're glad to be back. Hey, Sandy, what's going on? It's Mondays, as by now you know, it's Mondays with Sandy Williams. How you doing, my friend?
I'm glad to be back. I say that every morning.
Yes.
I wake up, open my eyes. Oh, yeah, I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, it is always good to actually open your eyes and see
and
another
be back.
Day. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot to talk about, Sandy. Just important information that, you know, if we don't bring you this important information, I don't know who will. And I really, every time Sandy's here, he's the one guy who can really kind of put all these things into perspective. So I want to begin the show with a really, really important subject. It really is important, Sandy. And armpit hair is back. Yeah, armpit hair.
I read that same piece, and it was news to me.
Yeah. So let's see. A big story about armpit hair.
That is a slow news day.
Somebody got paid and convinced people.
Yeah, that was a story.
And not only a small story, it's a big story.
Yeah, it was carried in a number of news sources. I know.
What are your thoughts on armpit hair being back?
You know, I'm sort of agnostic on it. Although, you know, I have to say I never went through it. I don't know what to say about it. I think it might fit into one of those subjects that's probably better not to discuss.
Yeah, and clearly they're talking about armpit hair on women.
That seemed to be,
yeah.
I think on men it's sort of always been the, you know, it's not news.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not news, but not something you really want to, you know, have a lot of. Especially if it kind of carries an odor.
Wow, yeah. Well, you know, that's what I'm saying.
Some things are better left unsaid, yeah, I
this
guess.
Could, this information falls into the range of too much information pretty quickly.
And I'm like, you know, so this is an important story. The person who wrote this story?
Well, you know, it's kind of refreshing, actually. There's a lot of bad things to read about in the newspaper. Why not read about armpit hair for a while? I mean, it's not stressful.
No, it's not. And, you know, I never gave it much thought on whether or not I thought that armpit hair was...
I probably gave it just flashes of thought. Normally, I think it was at the moment when I saw it.
Yeah. Well, they knew what they were doing. That's why they stuck it there. They knew that some lame person was going to come in and talk about it.
Yeah. And there you are.
But anyway, just wanted to begin with something very light. And because there's so many tough topics to talk about, Sandy, I want to get right into the tough stuff, man. There's no point in holding back. I bet you weren't aware that Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck got married.
She changed her name to Affleck, too. She signed the notice of it Am I revealing that I've done stuff here?
So here we go. All of this information, people following Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck, I guess 20 years ago, you know, they had a romance, and here it is 20 years. Who really cares about J-Lo being married for the fourth or fifth time? Well, I guess
we're talking about it. Yeah, who really cares? I guess we both know. Yeah.
You know, it's just that this is like kind of big news and entertainment. And I'm like, okay, this woman has been married four or five times.
Yeah.
You know, let's just... You know, let's get beyond the fact, because what are the chances that Ben Affleck and J-Lo
are going to stay married?
Yeah.
That's like Elizabeth Taylor announcing a wedding, you know. She did it about every 4 years.
Yeah, or like her and...
Richard Burton.
Yeah, there you go. You know, several times.
Yeah. But look at that. Here we are. We're talking about a woman. This is 40 years ago. We're still talking about her. So apparently the world does care.
You know, Sandy.
Cleopatra stayed in the news for a couple of thousand years.
Yeah, well, she did. I guess, you know, this has been leading up to this marriage. They've been talking about it over and over again. What would you say about a woman, i.e. J-Lo, who was in a relationship with, I can't believe we're talking about.
Well, you're talking on and on about it.
Well, I'm trying to fill some time before we go to the break.
Sure. Well, that's really what J-Lo is all about. She just fills
filling
time.
And so she was with the New York Yankee guy. What was that?
Jeter?
Yeah. Was it Jeter?
No, it wasn't Rob Jeter. It was
one of the greatest Yankees that ever played the game.
And we've forgotten his name.
Yeah, we've.
But
she was Alex Rodriguez.
Alex Rodriguez. The young guy knows.
I got it.
Like him a lot. I just like him as a player. Like.
Okay, so she was with Alex Rodriguez and
A-Lo.
Yeah.
A-Rod.
And so
A-Rod.
A-Rod.
He was the original A-Rod.
And everybody was looking for them to get married, and their families were blended, and all of a sudden she decides.
Did they never get married?
No.
Oh.
I think she found out he, you know, had
consorted with others?
Yeah, with somebody else. And young Connor is nodding his head in the affirmative. He's aware of all those things, right?
Begrudgingly.
So she walks away from him. They're scheduled to get married. She calls up the guy from 20 years ago. And, you know, he walked away from his family and four kids.
Well, now, is that exactly how it happened, or are we now we just conjuring up that? We don't know.
Well,
maybe we do know.
Well, that's what happened. I read it in the Star magazine.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, and you bought that at the grocery store? Right there where you were checking out?
No, in the doctor's office.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, you know,
you have the opportunity to buy the National Enquirer or Star or whatever right there at the grocery store when you're checking out.
But the Star has better color pictures.
Mm.
You know, and they're really done in a flashy way. The Enquirer is a cheaper paper, and... Yeah, I like the
tabloid.
Shiny pictures in the Star magazine. But anyway, I was reading that in the doctor's office and said, this looks pretty good.
That's where I used to read Playboy as a kid.
I don't think they make that anymore, do they?
I don't know.
Oh.
And if I
hey, Connor, look that up and see if they still make
it. No, I wouldn't tell you.
Connor, look that up and see if they still make Playboy.
Of course they still make Playboy.
Oh, well, how do I know? The guy who created it is long gone.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I digress.
Yeah, and we started out digressing.
And so she walks away from that guy. She calls up the old flame. The old flame is ready to go, and hey, let's...
She's like a flame, and he's like a moth.
Yeah. No. Well, that's a bad combination.
Yeah. The moth flies to the flame. Can't help itself. And, yeah, and then the flame does it in.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. What are the bets? How long do they last? And this is just great radio, man. I don't... People actually get paid for doing this. How much planning does it take?
Yeah, that's just not much at all. You know? And J-Lo's there to talk about every day.
Yeah. You, well,
we can shift over to Kim Kardashian.
Oh, please, God.
We can, no. move down on the food chain.
Hey, did you hear Connor? He said, oh, God, please, no. Don't talk about Kim Kardashian.
No one ever talks about her. People just look at pictures.
You know, it's... amazing that they've gotten that wealthy.
Yeah.
From being known for what?
Well, you'd have to talk about anatomy.
All their scams.
It doesn't take a full class in anatomy either. It's a survey course.
Well, well, it's Monday mornings. What do you guys expect from us?
Yeah.
You know, it's can't say it's a slow news day.
We got our voices warmed up.
Yeah. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And we just don't have anything else to talk about. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Connor, what should we talk about, man?
I don't know. Taxes.
Okay, all right. Got to go to break. 844-967-2789. You can join us at that same number. Text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is here. We'll figure out something after the break. I'm sure he's got something we can talk. Did you go fishing this weekend?
No.
Oh. That's not going to work either, huh? All right. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy has said to me during the break that he would not come back ever again if we ever dare talk about J-Lo and Kardashian and
I'll come back for Kardashian.
Which one?
No, I don't even know. There is one named Kim. I know.
And so does everyone else. But anyway, you wanted to talk about a serious subject, and go ahead. Start off with it.
Well, you know, I was just on the drive out here. I was thinking about how the world is fragmenting, and that Russia's now talking, and China's obviously operating on the notion of forming alliances with non-Western countries. And we think, oh my God, non-Western countries. But the world is comprised mostly of non-Western countries, if you look at the population base. And both China and Russia are looking at what are called North-South alliances, moving in the direction of Southern Asia, India, for instance, Africa. Those are very big population centers and very big natural resource centers, very big countries. China itself is a very big country. Russia is a huge natural resource center. You take all these non-Western countries, you know, we think that Western democracy is the way everyone in the world ought to live. But in fact, a majority of the people in the world think otherwise, or at least live otherwise. And so then should we be trying to impose our version of Western democracy on the rest of the world, or is the rest of the world simply going to walk away from that premise? And then you look inside the United States, and you can see the same kind of disaffection. The disaffection that the right and the left have for one another has become very pronounced. But same with different sectors of the country, geographic sectors of the country. We've got California talking about secession, Texas talking about secession. I mean, literally talking about it. People in their legislators talking about it. We've got learned writers now, people thinking about the notion of the United States fragmenting and at least the Americas sort of reorienting the country's boundaries in North America. And then when you think about it, with Mexico and the United States having an unstable boundary and the issues associated with immigration, you can begin to visualize the fact that this might actually happen. And you've got lots of people thinking that 2024 is an election that could lead to essentially the fragmentation politically and the loss of stability in the American system.
You know, couple that, Sandy, with the fact that if that occurs, we are in such control over so many other nations that depend on us, that if that does occur, the ripple effects throughout the world may not ever be recoverable.
Well, you know, that's really what the Trump administration to the rest of the world meant. Suddenly the United States was no longer something that they could depend upon in terms of a consistent approach to the world. His approach to the world was very different than the prior administrations. And the rest of the world noticed that. And the rest of the world, I think, began to become much more alert to the proposition that in America, we change governments every 4 years. And foreign policy used to be an area of sort of general dynamic stability and was not an area of dynamic change. And suddenly it became an area of dynamic change and has remained so. And the rest of the world took note and is beginning to treat us in that regard. So how would you treat a country that you couldn't rely upon, you could rely on every 4 years there being a change in policy? You would start to rely on that country less. So you would start to distance yourself from that country.
So let me ask you, Sandy, you're a world traveler, and so because you're a world traveler, you see this thing from a global perspective because you see other people from across the earth and realize that they're human beings too and that their value is no different than an American. We're all a part of the world, right? But when you're in America and all you see is America, and so you can't really focus or envision the other people of the earth, and so you're trapped in this just we. Yeah. And that's kind of what it is in this country. Well, even though I have not done world traveling, I do know that there are other people outside of this nation, and the fact that we want to control them and what they do, it's not going to sit well forever. And that time is coming to an end, and yet the people inside of our fellow countrymen don't want to let that go.
Well, you know, in a way, the countries that had colonies, the English colonial system, they had a lot of trouble letting that go.
Right.
And it was it lasted for 150 years only, but it was something that they got used to. And the pervasiveness of English culture around the world persuaded the English that they were central to the world. Well, Americans are sort of persuading themselves of the same. The fact that our rock music became the international standard, the fact that the wearing apparel and our brand names became international standards, I think persuaded us that that we, American, and our American system was the international standard that everyone wanted to live under. And fashions are a lot different than politics. Fashions are a lot different than socioeconomic systems. And so the pervasiveness of our fashion fools us, I think, into thinking that everyone in the world looks to America for the symbol of what they want to be. And it might be that in some respects culturally, but it's not necessarily that politically. And the other thing is that it's one thing for people who want to adopt cultures and adopt styles. It's another thing to have it imposed on them. And the rest of the world, beginning in about 1995, when we had this Pax Americana thing, began to resent the American bully who ran around the world sort of imposing its will on people indirectly, but palpably.
You know, Sandy, and if that's not enough, we see ourselves as the hammer and they're the nail.
Yeah.
And in simplest terms, that's kind of the way we see it. We've got to go to a break. I want to continue this on the other side.
The nail does not like the hammer.
I know. Right. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Mondays. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. For you.
This is exactly where we aren't going in the world.
Yeah. Today. Yeah. I mean, it's, if you listen to the lyrics of it, it is right on point.
Yeah. And the truth. Well, you know, it's happening both internationally with this sort of the clear split now. That's the Ukrainian war has made it very obvious, but there is this growing divide between the Western countries and the Western view of democracy and how countries should
be.
You
know what I forgot? We have to come back in. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy is really talking about where we really are. And the time and the place and what's really at stake in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking of it. I told you I had this epiphany when I was driving out here. I sort of tried to visualize historians 50 years from now looking back at, and, you know, they're obviously in a situation where they understood what happened from what's going on now. But thinking about one of the possibilities of what could happen, which is essentially a reorientation of both the world and of our country. And there are many people talking about the reorientation of our country, essentially a fragmentation of it into parts. The people talk about the civil or revolutionary war, whichever people want to call it, that might happen after the 2024 election. So we're even talking about this in a time horizon that's only about 2 years away. But there's something going on, and I realize now that it's much more than just this debate between conservatives and liberals, and everyone has understood that it's a little more than that because our society has become so polarized over conservative versus liberal. But that debate about conservative versus liberal has transformed itself into states talking about secession, you know, Texas, California, various places. And then we have the Supreme Court, which is very worried now. We've talked about it. The Federalist Society talked about it for quite a long time, about the administrative state. Well, the administrative state, well, that's like the regulations, the regulatory agencies of the federal government. But when people today and when the Supreme Court writes about the administrative state, they're basically talking about the federal government. And this, there is this direct attack on the federal government, trying to chip away at any of its powers or all of its powers, and to try to return everything back to the states. That's the Roe v. Wade reversal decision, right, in a nutshell. And so what does that mean? What could happen from that?
Well, you know, Sandy, what it makes me think about is, let me see if I have this right. We continue to spend $800 or $900 billion a year to defend ourselves from somebody from outside, right? That we think is coming. And yet inside, we're talking about what's going to cause more destruction than what anything from outside.
Yeah, the fragmentation of America is not going to be caused by anything outside of America. It's going to be inside. And incidentally, if we fragment, which of those states is going to decide to undertake their portion of the $800 billion we spend on defense? I mean, that this huge importance that we place on our defense will disappear in the circumstance of our country fragmenting down. And what the conservatives seem to be chasing is a breakdown and the formation of something that would be less cohesive probably than the European Union between the states which are currently America. So my view of the conservative chase right now, for whatever they're chasing, I was saying off the air, it's like dog chasing car. And, you know, they want to see the federal government disappear. They want to have states operating independently. Okay, what are the implications of that? Well, the defense industry might be pretty worried about that outcome, because what do they do? Who do they lobby? And which of those states is going to undertake their full share of the $800 billion? So that's a big change right there. But the main thing is that it's a bit like the Roe v. Wade pursuit. When dog catches car, it's a different story.
You know, Sandy, if you start beginning to think it through, and the states get their way, you know, health care.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean,
all the things the federal government bellies up to the bar to do would be now the state's obligation, and it gets a lot more difficult and a lot more complicated. And there's a serious reason why the Federalists won the dispute at the time of our founders. You know, we started out with the Articles of Confederation, which looked a lot like the European Union, and we ended up with the Constitution, which created a federal government that had overriding powers.
You know, Sandy, one of the horrific thoughts about all of this is that we kind of saw this vision developing in Republicans over the last 20 years. And you saw it coming bit by bit. And it was dismissed. They were so persistent. They continued. They knew what they wanted. And now, whether people want to believe it or not, we're on a precipice where this could possibly happen.
And
right?
And incidentally, at this very same time, when our democracy is sort of suspect from an internal perspective, and we've got one another wanting to change things dramatically from what it is. We've got people hating one another because of the disagreements they have about our government. At this very time, we're trying to export our version of democracy to the rest of the world and persuade them that this is the way they all ought to live. We go to China and want to criticize the Chinese approach to their government, and we have a government here which is, now granted, we all have the right to say what we want to say about this government. That's a virtue, and it's an extreme virtue. But we also have a situation which many people look at and realize is getting increasingly fragile, and we have a society which is not comfortable with itself.
So the representative government that we tout all over the world as the greatest example of government.
Right.
How's that working for us?
Yeah, how's that working? And we find out that parliamentary governments, as much as they seem to air their dirty linen in public all the time between all their various parties, these parliamentary countries seem quite stable. You were reading off the record about Italy's government being on the brink of collapse. Well, they're talking about the parliamentary government being on the brink of collapse.
Right.
They're not talking about Italy itself being on the brink of collapse.
Right.
In America, we're writing about America essentially being on the brink of collapse. I mean, a lot of people don't want to look at it that way, but increasingly we have the Wall Street Journal, we have the Financial Times from outside the country, we have all of the different political perspectives looking at America, worrying about what happens after 2024.
You know, Sandy, it is more than frightening. And people should be frightened because just based on what's going to happen, let's say the Republicans take back over the Congress, which is a safe bet now.
Well, and the Supreme Court, with their view of the administrative state, let's just say that they continue to attack and to erode the powers of the federal government. You know, it is true that the New Deal, the Supreme Court that empowered the New Deal. There were plenty of Supreme Court decisions that expanded the view of the federal power of the government, okay? So there's no question that the ultimate outgrowth of the New Deal was an expanded view of the powers of the federal government. Now we've had this long-term conservative movement aimed at chipping away at that. Now they're not chipping away at it. They're using blocks of dynamite.
So hang on the line. We'll come to you after the break. Our phone lines are open, as always, at 844-967-2789. You two can join the conversation as Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, this is a subject that requires a lot of thought. And there are people who are just getting up, wiping their eyes, and they're drinking their coffee, and they're saying,
what the hell are these people talking about?
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have the dialogue and the conversation, because it conceivably, just based on the conversations that are being had, there are people who are pushing for this to happen.
Well, I think people are pushing for things and they don't quite understand the implications of what they're pushing for. So, you know, when the dog's chasing we've got lots of dogs chasing cars, I think, and I don't think they realize that, the one, they're dogs, and two, that they're chasing cars, and what the implication of what they're doing is. But there's an awful lot of what's going on in our country that looks and feels a great deal like Brexit. You know, Brexit was this impulse of Britain to get out from under the EU and the immigration aspects of Brexit that allowed people to move freely amongst all of the the EU nations. So Britain was uncomfortable with the capacity of someone from Turkey to just move to England without any passport or visa problems, and so that was one part of the impulse. But the other part was just the the EU was imposing and creating regulatory burdens on and standards that everyone had to meet within it, and England just began to think, you know what, we're a nation, we don't want to put ourselves under that kind of jurisdiction. It was a states' rights issue, really, because the European Union is really very much like the Articles of Confederation were created by our founders for the initial year or two of the American existence, and then it became, after the Constitutional Convention, a federal government that was different and more powerful. And now we've got lots of people who want to get away from that federal government and want to go back to the Confederation, and with that Confederation will come Brexits.
Well, but Sandy, the people, the average everyday Joe has no concept at all of what those things would mean. Can you imagine just the states being independent of one another? Global trade, which we're all interconnected with now.
Right.
What is that? None of these states can survive without global trade now.
Well, I think they'd be a part of global trade. You know, back at the time of the Civil War, the South, the Confederate states were a big part. You know, they in fact were completely dependent on international trade.
Yeah, but they'd be bidding against one another.
Well, they would be bidding against one another. And the other thing that you mentioned was interesting is like the federal debt and the whole financial system that we have, the Federal Reserve, there's so many ways in which our federal system ties us together, and this nonsense of people talking about secession, and that really is dog chasing car. And when they catch the car, the implications of it are profound. And you know, I said earlier, the industrial defense establishment, wow, they'd be terrified from that outcome. The financial world terrified by that outcome. All kinds of, you know. So what are you achieving from it? Well, you're achieving, you know, the social issue dislocations and separations that people are wanting to achieve, and the disadvantages of that are profound.
Well, so you can look at a state like Texas, and because of their natural resources, they foolishly believe we're better off than the rest of the nations. We've got oil.
Yeah.
And natural gas. And so financially, we'll be able to. So what are they going to do then? Build the walls around Texas so American citizens can't get there?
Would it be walls or just the fact that turns out that what do they turn into then? Russia's got natural resources too. You know, that's exactly right. What they have. And they have the potential wealth from that. They also have the potential problems in their economy from that. And, you know, Texas, if they looked at why Texas is thriving now, it has much more to do with Dell computers and that kind of industry than it has, and in Austin, Texas, than it has to do with oil and gas. And its future is clearly staked out in the direction of some things other than oil and gas. No, I mean, I think that this right now is a time period when we've got lots of dogs chasing lots of cars, and it's all creating a sociological and political environment that is untenable. And my fear is that dogs are going to catch cars.
So
I mean, they already did with the overturn of Roe v. Wade, and we'll see what happens going forward.
So Sandy, we do know that there's a shadow government, and do we think for one minute that a shadow government would allow this to take place?
I think the problem is that the social movements we're talking about are in some respects an uprising against the shadow government. When people talk about the administrative state or the deep swamp, you know, that some of the things that people have used to talk about the federal government that is the unseen powers, they're talking about that shadow government as well, and the power of lobbyists and the things that have disturbed Americans at their soul about the way things are going. Some of it, in my mind, is a reprehensible disturbance. Some of it has to do with racism. Some of it has to do with more venal impulses of human nature. And some of it has to do with the things that upset me as well, which is money and politics, the loss of people's control over government. All of those things have prompted a lot of people to want to step away from the governments as they know them and just have something different.
You too, right? So
you and I share a thought. I suspect we'd like our government to be different than it is.
There's no question. I mean, I come on here Monday through Friday and challenge our government because, you know, people say to me, well, if you don't like it, you know, I mean, this is the greatest nation on earth and nobody's questioning that. It can be better and it should be better, right? It should include all of its citizens. And that's kind of what we're talking about. If that view of it and somehow we place the value back on the American people, and as you always talk about a birthright from being a human being, and that should have some value in the society.
Well, and it should, and I think we have two different dynamics going here. We have a power structure that senses that it's going to lose its power in the current structure, okay? And that power structure is essentially the white majority, the European Judeo-Christian people who believe they're the roots of American culture. Those people want to hold on to power, and to some extent they're willing to break up the current country in order to secure a nation or nations in which they will continue to have that power. And then we have the other side of the coin, the people who want to have the power provided to them that a democracy should provide them as people, who can feel the subjugation they have under this power structure, and they want something different too. So we have a dynamic going here that is leading two different movements in the direction of wanting something very different.
Well, Sandy, it's historic from the standpoint that no other nation on earth has been able to remain in power forever. And we don't want to believe in America that could be us.
Right.
We want to believe that we're going to be the one nation that lasts forever because of our military might.
Yeah.
And so the military might has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
No, I mean,
about.
We pat ourselves on the back, and I pat us on the back. We're 250 years old as a constitutional democracy, and that is...
It's still young, though.
Well, that's historically pretty old for any government, though. If you go through history and look for governments that have lasted in one fashion, that's a long run, okay? And so if we want this run to continue, I think we're going to have to find ways to improve how we operate internally so that we don't have Brexit.
Yeah. Our phone line is open, as always, at 844-967-2789. You know, It is an idea that merits thought, and we've got to think of those things, because you know this can happen in the twinkling of an eye. We're not aware, we don't believe it, but we're closer than we've ever been to it. Got to go to a break. Sandy Williams in the studio, 844-967-2789 is the number. What do you say? You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.